Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine. This week we're going to talk about veterans, and we have a lot to talk about because we have 2,700 National Guard returning from Afghanistan and Iraq this week to the region, and a number of them are coming here. My guest is a Clatsop County Veterans Affairs Officer, Ken Rislow. He's also the counselor in Tillamook County for veterans. Welcome, Ken. You want to give me that, your Tillamook title?
Yes, good morning, Ann. I'm the contract readjustment counselor for the VA Vet Center in Portland through all of Tillamook County.
Okay.
And it's the same position as Candy Solvers holds for Clatsop County.
Uh-huh, okay. So you are spread out.
Yes.
But somehow you managed to make it in here to talk to us. Okay, so let's talk about these 2,700 people. How long have they been in war?
Probably close to 15 months.
Whoa, long time. Okay, so then they plop down after, like, they leave the desert and then, boom, 2 days later they're in Washington or Oregon?
Actually, they're trying to drag that out. It's supposed to be taking about 3 weeks. Oh. They've learned, one of the lessons they learned from Vietnam is not to freeze dry someone in country and then send them back home so they thaw out the next day in the middle of San Francisco.
Right. It's a pretty rough exactly. Transition.
In fact, coming home is probably going to be the second worst challenge they faced. The first worst was getting used to being in country and then getting depressurized to come back home.
Uh-huh. Okay. So these people are, these 2,700, where are they from?
Well, basically, they're part of the Oregon National Guard in various units of the Oregon National Guard, coming home, and they're being sent to Fort Lewis for out-processing. There are the integration to the various, they'll receive briefings from particularly what's called the Oregon National Guard Reintegration Program, and then the Oregon Employment Department, everybody and their dog will be up there telling them what's out there for them. And, of course, all they're going to be interested in is getting home.
Uh-huh.
So, really, that's not going to hit them until they actually walk in the front door.
And so then they're delaying the walking in the front door as long as they can.
That's
so they
correct.
Can try to get them services. Did they get evaluated right away when they come back stateside?
No. Now, there's a new, their administration has put in General Shinseki into as the Secretary for the Department of Veterans Affairs. And really crank the pressure up to get the Department of Defense to utilize the same medical communication system as the VA does, which before had been totally different. Also, the same evaluation system, which they're still, that's that noise in the background is the Cuisinart running this, throwing both agencies in the same pot and mixing them up. It's a long process, and they have a long history of being separate and are fiercely independent of each other. Now they've been forced to come together to the benefit of the person coming back from service.
But is it working, or are they still fighting?
It's hard to say yet.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's a work in progress.
Uh-huh. Okay. So we don't know. Now, you said before we went on that if you have medical problems, the first thing would be it's going to take a lot longer than it would have.
Well, actually, what's going to happen, the standard system has had a crisis in system for enrolling people in the VA medical centers, had a crisis in Portland. So in health care, once they get home, within the first week or so, is going to be them applying to just simply going to the VA emergency care unit in Portland.
So don't try to make, if you need medical care quickly and you've just come back, you need to just go to the ER at the VA center, not try to make an appointment.
No.
And then they'll handle you once you're there.
That's right.
Okay. Because if you try to make an appointment, what will happen is they'll call you out for 6 weeks.
Because of staffing shortages and also the 3,000 people, also the influx caused by the severe economic recession.
Right.
Everyone's coming in for health care. That many people are coming in for health care that wouldn't have been there in the first place. It's the this last week, the enrollment time jumped from 8 days to 8 weeks. And they're trying to work that down right away. But they're probably 3 to 5 staff members short in the enrollment department.
So all these crisis. People may be having their first experience with the veterans healthcare system. And it sounds like it's likely to be a frustrating one.
It could be easily. And it's if a person's briefed out front what's happening inside,
They're
mentally ready for it.
Right.
Because I think the average reception care for the person coming in is good to excellent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then if a family member is listening to this and their person is going to be coming home in the next week or so, and they think they need some health care, rather than making an appointment, just hoof it up there and get them into the emergency room.
Plan and just simply go
even
in
if
there.
It isn't an emergency, just to get them somebody looking at
and
them.
Many of these things are urgent care. Fall under that title of what's called today urgent care,
right?
Where they have to have a situation looked at, or they're out of running short of medication, those kinds of things,
right? Or they may have a minimal or some kind of a brain injury, like they don't seem like the way they were before, well, but they're functional.
One of the worst things that people here are going to be facing is the fact that the person coming in the door is not the same person that left. It's going to war is one of the life-changing events in existence. Fortunately, that's yours and not mine.
Shut up.
I think coming home is really the second really major traumatic event they've had.
Mm-hmm.
Getting used to a war theater is an event in itself. But coming home when you're keyed up to survive in a place where death is at any tick of the second hand, mm-hmm. with no connection to what's going on in front of you, is a major issue. So plus we have people that have been in heavy action, either in Afghanistan or in Iraq, where may have suffered, been exposed to a traumatic situation, and have signs of what amounts to post-traumatic stress disorder. Or worse yet, where they've been exposed to major explosions, in the sense of IEDs or other or close in mortar rounds or rocket rounds, then they're going to be facing what amounts to traumatic brain injury, which is close head injury.
Right, which you can't see.
That's right, and the signs are very similar to PTSD.
Right, so those signs would be
irritability. Rapid mood swings, inability to pay attention,
can't sleep,
nightmares. Sleeplessness, nightmares. The nightmares are, yes, and also what amounts to nightmares entirely, but intrusive thoughts. The memories of the war come back, mm-hmm. and people tend to become preoccupied with the war.
Mm-hmm.
They're also seeking the connection with that tremendous vitality that goes on in country. Keyed up to happen. It's like going to watching a horse race in the last quarter mile. Everybody is at the rail watching. And that's what it's like to be there, because you're waiting. Every sound, every event has a meaning, and you're primed for that. I think the most important thing a family member can do is simply say, "Welcome home. Glad you're home," and then become a really good listener. Okay. And if you find that your loved one is, it can be man or woman today, comes home and really does sort of settles that right out of what used to be their social contacts and winds up in the bedroom or in the bedroom by themselves or isolating themselves, that's the time to call their attention and bring them either to the attention of the VA Veterans Center in Portland or the medical center also in Portland, so that they can get care.
And sooner is better than later.
That's right.
Don't let them sit there for a month.
And we're really talking about something they've relabeled post-traumatic stress disorder as combat-related stress disorder. This is not something that happens to a few people. It happens to just about everyone to some extent. It's a question of how at what point it starts to really interfere with their life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly treatable.
Yes.
And that's the good news.
And it's really, it happens, most people don't pay any attention to that. They're just going on about business. And if they don't realize that these changes have happened in them and their ways of hearing information or acting in everyday routine facts of life have totally changed. So you get these they stand out like a in a like a Christmas tree light in the dark.
Well, you know, and one of the things is, one of the ways that it shows up is, you know, you're going along and there's nothing happening, and suddenly you get this huge out of character or out of the appropriate for the situation response from somebody.
That's right.
And you know it has nothing to do with, we're all sitting here, everything is calm, and suddenly this person is freaking out and they don't know what's happening and they feel very out of control, and that's a clue. And it can, things can get stirred up from nothing.
It is a clue. And I think there's the other side of the reflection of that is the family member is confronted by that. They don't know what responsibility they've had into it, and it changes them. And all of a sudden, they get very careful and they isolate themselves from the person. So the person's left out not only by his family, he's left out, his mind is turned off to being around people.
Right. That's a bad scene. Yeah, then they're headed for more trouble.
Okay. And the other thing, when people go to war, the power equation at home, either if it's a man or a woman, the parent left in the home front puts together the household. And then so when somebody else comes in that house, all the old routines have to be dredged up, but they're old routines, they're not the new routines. And people get used to being independent and not doing it on their own and making their own decisions, have to re-include a person they really care about but don't know how to live with anymore.
Well, you know, I know that families of fishermen and fisherwomen have been dealing with this forever.
Oh, exactly.
And certainly our local Coast Guard, they go away for maybe 3 months or maybe just 3 weeks, and they come back, and it's a different family every time. And these people have gone for 15 months. It's certainly their family have moved on in the sense of they've developed routines, right, and habits.
You know, they left children, infants in the crib, and you've got this little walking bear around giving you talking to you, giving you a hard time.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about the new GI Bill.
Which is a spectacular thing, I think, that's out there, which is provides 4 years tuition, fees, and books to anybody who's been discharged in the service probably after 2001. Was the critical time period. And the difference between that one and the old one was they used to give you, simply in the old Montgomery bill, they gave you a certain amount of money to live on. And it left you to cover the tuition and fees and all that thing, left all that in your to deal with.
Well, with the increase in tuition fees, that wouldn't even be feasible.
In Oregon, in a state school, you can get certain people have access to free tuition because of their military service. But this is going back to the program we're talking about. The old GI Bill took a secret that made the World War II GI Bill work. They paid for the tuition, they paid for the books, so that left the person with, at least he knew whatever money he could earn was going to go toward his upkeep, rather than having to have enough materials to work with.
Right. Well, especially, I mean, that's how my family, you know, that's how my parents bought a house. That's how, yeah. How we got going.
That was an absolute great thing. Mm-hmm. And it stayed with people. And we're talking about something that doesn't strand them. Now, we were talking about General Shinseki. He has a pretty good way about dealing with the VA. Somebody by telling them they will do, regardless of what's happening, they will do it. And one of the things that happens is a perpetual nightmare has always been the training, all the Regional Processing Center for education claims in Muskogee, that which are deal with education claims in a really cavalier way, and people can have, it's not unknown for people to be sitting there six or eight weeks waiting for the benefit to come in, and in the meantime life has gone on and they've missed
half the term,
and the landlord has put their bags out on the porch. And
they're going to speed that up.
They're really sitting on them.
Okay, so that means these 2,700 people are coming back, and maybe they were in school, or maybe they had a job, and now that job's not there anymore. They're eligible for this GI Bill.
They are. Well, you brought up an excellent topic. Many of these people are eligible for reentry into the position that they held before they left.
Uh-huh.
There's a special federal law which covers that, but they have to know about it. And in some cases, they have to be able to advocate for themselves and go after it, because the oddest people
don't know?
Don't, how can I say, opposed to it. And it's like the gas company has done an excellent, since the start of both the Iraq and Afghan wars, has done an excellent job with their people. They've held their positions for them. They brought them back in. They counseled them when they came back in. All those things that made life possible. Well, and other resources, both civilian and governmental agencies, have simply rejected them.
But that's actually illegal.
Unfortunately, it is. It takes a while for people to get the word.
Well, also, if you're coming back and you're stressed out, you're not going to try to initiate some problem. I mean, they know they've got a victim.
Yeah, exactly.
Or someone who's not at their best.
And I think that's where it's important for a family member to advocate for them.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
To be there for them and to support them in what they're up to.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more. If you have any questions for Ken Rislow, the Clatsop County Veterans Affairs Officer, give us a call here at 325-0010. You are listening to Your Health, and I'm Ann Goldine. La rivière coulait dans le sens du vent. Welcome back. Excuse me, you're listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine, and I'm with the Clatsop County Veterans Affairs Officer, Ken Rislow. Okay, so we were talking about that people coming back are eligible, most are eligible for the GI Bill for education. How do they apply?
I think their best bet is to come in and make an appointment and come in and see me.
Okay.
Another option would be to do it online. Be careful. We're talking about an online generation. Unfortunately, this is an online generation against a major bureaucracy. And some people have great luck. Some people have no luck.
Okay,
and they get
so
frustrated.
if you do an online application,
always feel to come in to problem solve it. Why isn't it working?
Okay, but so if nothing happens within a pretty short amount of time, then you should follow up.
And you picked up an excellent idea. In the VA is measured differently than outside time. Usually when I talk to a person about what's happening in the system, it's more kin to watching a slug cross a street than watching anyone else move. It's a very slow process, and your basic problem is to make sure he doesn't get run over or get lost.
Okay, so then if they do an online version, do you know the website?
Just va.gov and those.
Okay.
And now another thing, the VA website used to be fairly straightforward. Well, it's quite, at the moment, it's gotten very complicated and somewhat confusing. It takes a while to search through to find what you're looking for, but almost everything you need is there. The worst problem is you have no advocacy and you're trying to understand. It's a little about twice as difficult sometimes as doing your own income tax.
Okay, so if you're a techie or your veteran is a techie, they might be able to work through that maze. Or if you have a 15-year-old at home, you can probably work through that maze. And if not, they can call you.
I think it helps. I honestly think it helps to have someone who's an advocate in the system.
Absolutely. So give your phone number and we'll give it again at the end.
It's going to be 866-325-2429.
Okay, and that's a toll-free number, if someone's in Pacific County,
it'll reach.
They can call. Okay, so it's not restricted.
No,
anybody can call you. Okay, and so that's veterans' benefits or educational benefits.
Now the other thing coming in, we talked a little bit about what's welcoming a person home and becoming aware of trying to deal with them in kid gloves. I think try to be with them. Mm-hmm. And just try to listen and be in with some patience at the same time with some support. Don't let them get stranded.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this state, we have an excellent reintegration program, which is a model for other National Guard units, which applies to everyone coming back. And I found them most helpful in actually doing hands-on kinds of caring for people. And they'll usually have a thing to go. Another thing I found out in recent months is that many people, because of the economic condition, it's very hard for people to find work, and they find themselves on their unemployment, which they're entitled to when they come back. Well, the Senate has been playing games with unemployment, and some of these people have run out and faced a situation of no money, period. And I was just joking with Ann a moment ago about the landlady getting your benefit after the landlady put your bags on the porch.
It doesn't help very much when it's that late.
You get desperate.
Yeah, and now you're moving in, you're sleeping on the couch of your friend or...
Exactly. Or you're sleeping in your car if you're lucky. Mm. You're couch surfing, and that's a major issue around here.
Yeah, we don't want to have that. So now that kind of goes into employment. So then if there is no job waiting and you can't get a job, then they need to talk to Pat.
I would think the two people they should see first, either order, would be myself and then also Pat Preston, who's a local veterans employment representative.
His job is to help people get jobs.
And he has some hands and pots of money to do for particular kinds of vocational training or job readiness things or mm-hmm. cover expenses prior to getting a job, those kinds of things.
So we're going to run into homelessness with some of these people?
Yes.
Okay. And there are some emergency funds for housing, correct?
For short-term housing.
Right.
Unfortunately, there is nothing for transitional for housing after I can deal with people for about 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Basically through the Argonne Senate Bill SB 111 gave us enough money to get people off the street for that length of time.
Okay. It seems like if during that 2 weeks everyone can work really hard to get them a job and a real place, then they can be they'll be going. But that may not be enough time.
It gives them enough time. Mm-hmm. One of the critical issues was transitional housing in this area. There is nothing on the North Coast.
What is that? How would that look?
That would look as a placement for them with our model. We've just put forward a model, which would be a comprehensive care model. What I mean by that is a number of agencies have come together because it's such an immense project for this area, in a consortium to provide housing, mm-hmm. medical, mental health, addiction,
employment,
mm-hmm. vocational guidance, vocational education, all of those things under one place and make them available.
So like a veteran center where they could live and go to classes and learn. Yeah,
exactly.
The whole.
And we tie that together with the community college and also with probably the aquatic center, those kinds of things, mm-hmm. where they'd have
a full life.
Full life. And they could do that for up to 2 years or even longer if necessary if they were in the program.
Well, that would eliminate homelessness, drug addiction. I mean, it would fix a lot of the problems that we've seen every time we have a war.
Exactly. And it would really reach out to people because they would be dealing with their own comrades. It wouldn't be like going out and trying on the street and doing cold calls to find service. That's another winner.
Right.
But they'd also be someone to watch out. They made their appointments.
You know, the other thing about that is whatever it costs would probably be returned in multiple fold by the loss in productivity, you know, getting people back on their feet as quick as possible, getting them functional, getting them hooked up with other people. I mean, it would reduce long-term medical costs and it would be a savings to have a center
dramatically
like this.
I think it's critical that we work with people immediately after they're back. So that we don't find them facing 40 years of this thing where they're never quite fit into society, and there's always it requires special service. Well, that special service is very expensive, and for all practical purposes, we might as well put the money in the first place where they can become
what they need right
only,
now.
Not only safe and secure, but they can mm-hmm. be productive members of the society. This is great talent. This is a great pool of talent. These are some of the brightest people and most competent people in the country.
Okay, so
back.
what state is this transitional center right now?
Right now,
is it an idea?
It's an idea going into a grant application, and it will be turned into a. We started with a blitzkrieg because I actually wanted to do it for this year, but as I was advised by a grant writer that we could that was not going to happen, so we said that we turned it into a siege. We're going to put it. And we're developing the pieces and coming at it in full bore for this next go around. And these are grants that are issued, RFPs, requests for proposals, mm-hmm. that are issued by the federal government mm-hmm. at least once a year.
Uh-huh. Okay, so these are federal grants might fund like
if it would fund the capital. It would. There are two parts of it. One would be the capital improvement of the building.
Mm-hmm.
We have it so happens we're fortunate enough to have a natural for this.
You have a building?
Yes.
Wow.
With Northwest Oregon Housing is part of our consortium. Uh-huh. That's our preliminary consortium.
Sure, that's a logical.
And they have the Uniontown building, which is not being utilized. They've been really super supportive in us going forward with that.
Wow.
We have Pat Preston over at the Employment Service and Joyce Aho, the director over there, have been more than supportive. We have George Sobel from Community Action. We have Larry Peterson from Astoria Point for Addiction Services. We have Vet Center in Portland supporting this.
Mental health?
Mental health is Candace Solers and Joan Berry at this point.
Okay. And housing? We already did housing. Medical.
And then we have another part of it. We have Cindy Howe at Sunset Empire Transportation has come in as a major player. So it's really, so far, it's coming alive. It's like, it may turn into a, it's quivering on the table. It hasn't started walking like Frankenstein yet, but it may actually do that.
Okay, so if there's somebody listening or somebody knows somebody who might be a mover and a shaker, what kind of moving and shaking, like, do you need help with grant writing, or what do you need help with to make this get off the ground?
Whatever's there.
More specifically, that's a little.
Oh, that's a good question. Right now, grant writing is always an issue.
Okay.
More ideas.
Another piece of the puzzle.
We need to outreach to the Job Corps for their help in cost match and repairs to the building by their trainees. That kind of thing would be great.
Okay.
That has not been done yet. It's one of the things that's out there we have to do.
Okay.
And really.
So there's still some more partners that could help.
Exactly.
Oh, Tongue Point is a huge resource that could be helpful in lots of ways.
Plus, as a community resource to make. I remember, I've been around here a while, when they did the Seaman Center for the tramship seamen that were coming into town from what used to be the Soviet bloc countries.
Uh-huh.
And the people got together and put together this center to welcome them. And I think that, once we get the building and make it happen, to actually decorate the place and make it livable, mm-hmm. it's not just a place to fly, to come in out of the rain,
mm-hmm.
would be an important
part. No, make it a nice environment where people want to go there. I mean, there are homeless men that have rejected the current places that are available for them. They'd rather sleep outside because they don't want to go, either they don't want the religion, or they don't want to be in the place. So if it's an inviting place and people want to go there and it's supportive, and they don't feel either threatened or lectured to, treated badly, right. Then they'll go.
Oh, exactly. And I think we're not. Even the lodging situation itself, we're putting people in, have the potential of putting people in individual rooms, not in a bay where with 40 other people.
Right. Well, no, isn't that place set up as apartments? Isn't it kind of apartments?
It's actually set up as this was the old Swedish, Finnish boarding house that used to serve the gillnet boat fishermen.
Oh, so they're set up like a sleeping rooms then?
That's right.
How many are there?
18.
Oh, that would
and
be
then
a good
there are four apartments, which we would use. It's our
first staff?
Major. No, our major situation, the way it's set up, we would use that for accommodations for women.
Oh.
So we would be able to do both.
Uh-huh.
We'd hope to get the connection with the Women's Resource Center because from that side of that standpoint.
Right.
Also, we're looking to make contact with the Native American community, both the Chinook Canal people and mm-hmm. the Grand Ronde people, because this applies to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And the most heavily represented veterans groups we have are people coming are throughout all the counties we're talking about. And the people come out here for a reason. They grew up out here, or they have to get outside the noise and hassle of being in the city.
Mm-hmm. They get come to a more quiet place.
Exactly.
Thank you very much for coming in, Ken. Like my brain is opened up as always. My guest has been Ken Rislow. He's the Clatsop County Veterans Affairs Officer. You've been listening to Your Health.